My guest is Dr. Jennifer Bird, and she is the first biblical scholar I've ever met, so I'm really excited to introduce her to you this afternoon. Jennifer, welcome to WLRH.
Thank you so much, Beth. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm so thankful to Reverend Ellen Jimerson for introducing you to me and getting this interview all hooked up and everything. You are doing some very exciting stuff lately.
Thank you.
Getting national attention for a feminist reading of the Bible. Do I have that right?
Sure. That's a good place to start.
Okay.
Yes.
What is your book called?
It's called Permission Granted, Take the Bible into Your Own Hands, and it'll be coming out in March of 2015.
Wow. Yeah. Very exciting.
Thank you.
You have your master's in, what is it?
Divinity.
Divinity mm-hmm. from Princeton University.
Princeton Theological Seminary.
There mm-hmm. we go.
Yes.
And then you have the doctorate as well from Vanderbilt.
That's correct.
And what were your studies there?
I have a doctorate in New Testament and Early Christianity.
Wow. That must have been fascinating.
It was very fascinating and fun and exciting. And I had a really great experience there. And then went on to teach biblical studies at a college for 6 years.
Well, you know, what I really want to know is, what is the Bible? What is it? Let's start with a really simple question. What is the Bible?
Oh, goodness. Actually, that's one of the hardest conversations to have, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first chapter of my book is titled What It Is and Is Not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, an important conversation to start with, as you've suggested, and yet in some ways can be the most difficult because, as a friend said, you're messing with people's rocks. People have their ideas in place, and they mm-hmm. are foundational, and they're important. And when you mess with any of those, suggesting that perhaps it's a little different than what they've always thought, it throws you off. It feels like you're removing someone's foundation. And that's how it affected me, by the way, which is what I talk about in the introduction.
Mm.
All of the conversations that I'm bringing up in this book, including what it is and is not, were very unsettling for me when I first encountered them. And each step along the way, I had to have this moment of, am I going to trust what these historians are saying to me? Or am I going to trust what I've always thought or what I've been taught? And I decided to trust and kind of open up and think, you know, for myself for a little bit about what these other scholars are suggesting. So, for instance, when you say, is the Bible, you know, I kind of laugh and joke, the Bible did not descend from heaven, oh, you know, all in one, you know, piece. It's written over 800 years, written down over 800 years. The stories it depicts, you know, cover almost 2,000 years. So you've got a lot of writing much after the events are that they're depicting have taken place. You have all kinds of passing of traditions. And so even just starting there can be unsettling. Then you look at, you know, there are all different types of genres within the Bible, right? Different, you know, we've got poetry, we have music, we have storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
That will send, you know, put the hair on the end of some people's necks to say some of it isn't meant to be taken literally, but is meant to be taken as a message, that there's a purpose of the story, not things that are literally took place. And that's hard for people. It was hard for me.
Jennifer, I want to ask you now, let's go to this other very simple, very complicated question. What is feminism?
I was hoping you were going to ask that. So many people say, isn't that a contradiction to say you're doing a feminist reading of the Bible? What is feminism? It depends on who you ask on so many levels.
Mm.
One of the basic ideas is being a feminist means that you believe that men and women are equal as humans. And my own personal definition of feminism takes it a step farther and says, if you believe that, then you are going to do in your world or whatever connects with you, things that actually back that up.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes that means working on legislation to get equal pay. Sometimes that means looking at men and women in the workplace in ways that validate them equally. Sometimes it means talking about family structures in a way that validates that men and women are equal, not that, for instance, the man has to be the head of the household and in charge of things. That basic idea comes not from an endorsement of men and women as equals. So there are all kinds of different ways that I think this idea of feminism plays out in our culture. And for me, it plays out in looking at the Bible and looking at the passages, not just that address women, but just passages in general. And keeping in mind that the biblical scriptures were written by men from their perspective in a time when women were thought of as property for the most part. And, you know, whether or not they're talking about women, that idea is going to then permeate the stories. It's going to be kind of a bit of a lens or a filter, if you will, for how they're depicting things that we can not judge them for, but be aware of as we're reading and talking about what we find in the Bible.
Was Jesus a feminist?
Part of me wants to ask what you think, but...
Well, he who is without sin should cast the first stone, and there you have it. It's right there in black and white,
red
and white, whichever ones get, if he said it. And then the one about judge not, and I would assume that applies to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Love your neighbor, doesn't matter who.
Right.
Could be any gender. He didn't say love your neighbor of a certain gender just because they're this gender or that. He didn't say that,
right.
Or at least we don't know if he did. It's
right.
Not in there.
Right.
And there's the Mary and Martha thing. There's that.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, those are both valuable ways to be because Martha's getting stuff done.
Yep.
Mary's thinking about things.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he probably was.
Well,
what do you think about that?
I have, with a lot of things, I have a kind of a mixed response, right? So I absolutely agree with you and the points you've raised, actually. And I think it's fun to talk about, for instance, the Mary-Martha passage from a different angle, as well as what you've just thrown out there, that this is, people have different things that they're interested in doing.
Mm-hmm.
What I enjoyed doing with that story is looking at the fact that Jesus affirms that Mary chose what she wanted to do compared to giving in to what she's been told she should do.
Oh.
And that was
interesting.
Yes, that was a life-changing message for me when I was about 22 or 23. And because I had been giving in to what, just to be honest, a lot of men told me I could and couldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
And so to say that I can listen to who I am and what I'm good at, and that the words coming from Jesus's mouth affirming that, wow, that was huge.
Mm-hmm. He, in essence, told her to claim her own power.
Right, exactly.
Just take your own
Be
power.
True to who you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's really powerful, if you ask me. Mm-hmm. It's fun to talk about the fact that there's a reference in Luke chapter 8 that talks about the 12 male disciples that are with Jesus, and then a handful of women who are lumped in by association as disciples. They're just not called that because perhaps that culture couldn't acknowledge it that way, perhaps. But these four or five women, Mary Magdalene being among them, are following along and providing for them, providing out of their resources for their travel.
Hmm.
So, you know, Jesus was fine having female disciples.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to say very playfully, and he had a bunch of sugar mamas making his travels happen.
Could very well be.
Right? And I don't mean that on the sexual level. I just mean that it was money coming from women that made it happen.
Mm-hmm.
So on some level, I mean, he was open to that. If you're going to take this tradition seriously, that's very affirming and embracing and open and right.
And then about how the women on the road were the ones that met him first when he comes up out of the tomb.
Well,
now that's kind of...
That's a huge piece.
Kind of important.
It's very important. If you want to talk about the thing that makes Christianity what it is the resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
And the first people he shows himself to are women. Or if you look at the Gospel of John, it's just Mary Magdalene who's there. And that's very powerful.
Is there anything else you want to go over?
This conversation about marriage is a big one for me. And I think I may have mentioned that in the email. But, you know, it's a can of worms. So...
Yeah, the marriage thing.
Yeah.
Let's go over that
if
you have time.
I'd love to. Thank you.
Sure.
The idea of talking about marriage today. I live in Portland, Oregon, and, you know, so I'm in one of the states that has recently endorsed or said it's legally, you know, it's okay to endorse a marriage between two men or two women.
Mm-hmm.
But this is obviously a conversation that lots of people around the country are struggling with, right? And coming at this conversation as a biblical scholar and as a person who did not used to be comfortable I did not used to be comfortable with same-sex marriages or same-sex relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a sense of why people are uncomfortable, what's at stake or where it is that their fear or their discomfort is coming
why
from.
Why they feel threatened
yes,
by it.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So talking, I in somewhat playful but very genuine manner, I've been doing conversations talking about biblical marriage. So if what people are doing is saying we can't have same-sex marriages because the Bible doesn't have same-sex marriages, mm-hmm. then I want to talk about what marriage actually is in the Bible. Mm-hmm. Let's start there. You know, and we can look at all these different 8, 9, 10 different examples that qualify as, quote, biblical marriage, which mm-hmm. includes polygamy, which includes a man having a wife and having sex with his wife's slave, or having sex with the woman who works in their home who isn't considered a slave, but she's still kind of their property. Or what about the levirate marriage that we talked about earlier, that a man marries a woman and doesn't have children, so his brother has to marry her in order to have children? And yes, it's a way of taking care of the woman, but it's also an issue of progeny and who gets the inheritance, and who cares what the woman thinks about all this? Mm-hmm. A woman is property. She's not consulted in this exchange.
And they've been doing it this way for a long time.
They have.
To keep the family stuff together or whatever.
Exactly. What about the example of if a virgin is, which most 99.9% of the time, virgin is a reference to females, not to males, which is also an interesting conversation. But if a virgin is raped by a man, she has to marry him.
Hmm.
And he owes her father a bride price of a virgin's bride price. So sex, who gets to have it? Men mm-hmm. get to have it with anyone they're not actually family with. I mean, it's, you know, and why? Why sex? What's the purpose of sex, biblically speaking? What's its function? And it is different then than it is now. Yes.
So that's what it was for.
That is what it was for. But even just the idea of not just him paying a virgin bride price, but actually still having to marry her. Mm. There's a connection there in their minds to the what sex is and does. And from the way it's talked about in a lot of these stories and in these kinds of laws that we see in Exodus and Deuteronomy, sex was a way of claiming property, claiming territory.
Hmm.
If a woman is your property as your wife, you having sex with her is part of marking that.
Mm-hmm.
And in at least initially, adultery was when a man had sex with someone else's wife.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same thing as a woman, right? The woman is the property, and you don't have sex with someone else's property. And so
Right. Sex
becomes a way of claiming somebody, mm-hmm. which on some level, I still see that mentality playing out today, especially with young folks, which I'm not sure is healthy, but I think is out there. This idea of having someone, right? This connection or this ownership of someone because you've had sex.
Right.
That's a biblical ideal. Mm-hmm. I'm not fond of it, but it is a biblical ideal.
And I'm guessing it was because they wanted to keep the bloodlines. They
That's
wanted to know whose child was
whose.
They
do. Absolutely. That's part of it.
But then if you didn't have any children, what then?
Oh, yes. That's a,
that's a
mark
whole
of
nother,
shame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whole nother mm-hmm. can of worms.
Mm-hmm. And so there's all these components to the conversation, in my opinion, mm-hmm. which have to do with this issue of sex is about those bonds and that we know whose children these are. It's also about procreation in the scripture, and in a way that I think is, you know, I try to be lighthearted about this. You know, the group of people that these scriptures were written for were a very small group of people who'd been promised they would be numerous and outnumber the stars.
Mm-hmm.
That means you got to get busy, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, newsflash, we're not about to become extinct as a human race due to low numbers.
Anytime soon.
Right. We actually might become extinct due to our high numbers, mm-hmm. right? Procreation today is not a draw. It's not. We should be thankful there are people having sex that doesn't lead to procreation.
Exactly.
Right? And so, and this was me, you know, when you hold to what scripture says about relationships, without taking the entire context.
You got to have the history.
You're missing so
much.
You got to
have the history that was happening at the moment.
Right. You know, people joke and say, it says Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. I'm like, you're right. It does. But why?
Yeah.
Why does it say that? They needed to procreate. They have all kinds of stories that push this agenda of don't waste that semen. You know,
mm-hmm. They
needed to grow in numbers.
Right.
That's not what we need today anymore.
Not now.
And
it's a whole different world.
It is a whole different world. And maybe one or two, you know, I could talk for quite some time about this, but just a couple of points about not just sex or marriage, but relationships in general,
mm-hmm.
right? How, you know, within most of the Bible, marriages are not talked about as being things that two people chose to enter into, which is primarily how Westerners think of marriage today. I realize not entirely. There are lots of ways that marriages come about and for lots of different reasons. Mm-hmm. But marriage is never discussed in the Bible as being founded on love.
It was for power and family and right. for connections.
Right.
It was political,
It
probably.
Was political. It was economic. Mm-hmm. It was all kinds of things. The beautiful passage in 1 Corinthians 13 that people love to read at wedding ceremonies, and it is beautiful, that wasn't being directed to married people. That was being directed to a community.
Mm.
So the same people who want to say, I can't embrace same-sex marriage because the Bible does not, still want to say, I want to embrace love as a foundational for marriage, but the Bible doesn't do that either.
Mm-hmm. So you've got different things
you
on the
do.
Different sides.
And so let's, how about let's take a step back and say love is love. It doesn't say who it's between.
Mm-hmm.
It says it's true and honest and, you know, so those are some of my thoughts about this issue for people, very honestly, who can't embrace this idea today because of their perhaps the way they read scripture and the way they've thought of it, you know,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps a kind of a limited way, you know.
So. Well, it's so good that you're out there filling in the pieces of the puzzle.
Trying to.
Because it's so necessary. Dr. Jennifer Bird is my guest today. Her book is Permission Granted, Taking the Bible into Your Own Hands. Dr. Jennifer, could you tell me if you have a website or a Facebook page or something cool like that?
I do, absolutely. My website is permissiongrantedthebook.com. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And you can see the table of contents there. I have some blurbs from each chapter so you can see what it is the book is about. And there's also a page where you can give me your email and I'll send out an email when it's available, letting you know that it's available.
Awesome.
So permissiongrantedthebook.com. Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Dr. Jennifer Bird, you'll be speaking at Weatherly Heights Baptist Church coming up this Sunday, July the 20th. What
That's
time
right.
will you be there?
I'll be in the 10 o'clock service.
Okay.
And then also teaching at 5:30 in the evening on Sunday.
Okay.
And then again Wednesday night at 6:45.
Wonderful. And everybody's invited.
Absolutely.
Very
Free
awesome.
And open to the public.
Very awesome. And to get in touch with Weatherly Heights Baptist Church, you would just either Google that or go to weatherly.com for more information. Very awesome. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much, Beth. I've really enjoyed my time.
Me too.